October 16th, 2008, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Hi, it's Jeff Robbins, back with episode 65 of the Lullabot Drupal Podcast. We get together every couple of weeks, talk about Drupal, your favorite content management system, and mine. This week on the podcast, we've got Dries Bertaert, who is the Drupal project lead. He's the guy that started Drupal. And he also started Acquia, and he also started Malum, since we've had him on the podcast last time. And we're going to talk to him about Acquia and Malum and find out more information about both of those things. We also do get a little chance to talk about Drupal at the end, so stick around if you want to hear a little bit about Drupal 7 and that kind of thing. Book your tickets for New Orleans, December 10th, 11th, and 12th, the Do It With Drupal seminar we are putting on at the Marriott in the French Quarter of New Orleans. It's going to be big. It's going to be awesome. We've got three different tracks happening. The schedule is up. Doitwithdrupal.com. You can find the schedule there. We've got some really, really great speakers. Chris Perillo of Locker Gnome fame is speaking. He also runs the Gnome Dex conference. We've got Heather Champ, who's the community manager at Flickr. John Ressig, the creator of jQuery. Chris Messina is speaking. We talk a little bit about him with Dries in this interview podcast. Lane Becker, from one of the founders of Get Satisfaction, is speaking, as well as Earl Miles, Ryan Zrama of Ubercart, Karen Stevenson from CCK, all of the Lullabot team. It's going to be really, really cool. We're getting really excited about it. There's early bird discount prices through November 1st. Register while you still can. That's what I have to say about that. Doitwithdrupal.com. All right, let's get to this interview with Dries. So I think the last time you were on the podcast was about a year and a half ago. It seems like less time. I guess we keep running into each other at various events and stuff, but we haven't actually done a podcast interview in a year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. It was the Drupal Association was just starting up. At the beginning of that podcast, we also mentioned that the DrupalCon that was happening at Yahoo was coming up, the one in Sunnyvale. What have you done since then?
A couple of things, really. I guess finished my PhD for one, which, you know, was a fun ride on its own. Started two companies as well. Acquia is one of them, and the other is Malum.
So let's talk about those two companies. We're not going to focus so much on this podcast on Drupal, as we have, like Drupal core work, as we have on previous podcasts, but we're going to focus a little bit more on Acquia and Malum. I guess we'll just start with Acquia because that seems to be, the one that people get, it's gotten excitement, a lot of excitement around Acquia. So let's start with Acquia. So what is Acquia and what does Acquia do?
Acquia is, you know, the company I co-founded with Jay Batson, I guess, like 9 to 10 months ago. And the goal of Acquia is to essentially be a provider of commercial support for Drupal. And so we do a number of things. We actually just opened up for business and launched our first products last week. And so the things we made available last week are, first of all, the Acquia Drupal distribution, which is essentially Drupal core with what we believe sort of the best modules from the Drupal community, and we bundle them together, make these available for free under terms of the GPL. So that's available for everybody to download from our website. We want to make it easier for people to get started with Drupal, so we you know, that's why we bundle things together. The other reason why we bundle things together is because it sort of draws the, you know, the border around the things we, you know, we want to provide support for, which is, you know, our core business. And so Acquia Drupal is the first thing we announced. The other thing is the Acquia Network. And we think that the Acquia Network sort of completes the Drupal experience by, you know, on the one hand, providing a set of electronic services, and on the other hand, providing you with Drupal support. And so I guess some of the services that we have are automated site management, which allows you to receive update notifications. It also has the Mullum spam blocking, which we'll talk more about later, it seems. We have a hosted cron service to make it easy for people to run cron, which has always been one of the small pains when setting up Drupal.
I think everyone out there has like one Drupal site that has never run cron.
Right, indeed. And I mean, it's a small service that we have, but we think it's going to be useful for a lot of people for exactly that reason. It's like, you know, having to go to your command line to set up a cron tab is one of these steps which, if we can avoid them, it's going to be easier for people to get started. So,
sure.
We also have some, I guess, some visibility into your site. So we have a dashboard which shows the health of your site. Is it up or isn't it up? And if it's your site is down, we send you a notification. We have some statistics, you know, stuff like that. And then, so these are the electronic services, and then we also have the support component, and that's depending on how much you pay, you can get access to different levels of support, going from email support to actually being able to call somebody on the phone 24/7. So that's the 1-minute summary.
Right on. So Acquia Drupal is actually the software, right? And then the network is the services. So basically the software speaking back to the mothership and various things happening. And then you also have a support layer on top of that.
That's correct.
Cool.
Yeah.
How did Acquia get started? Where's Acquia based? I think a lot of people are sort of don't really quite know sort of the story behind Acquia.
Is there one?
There
is one, I guess. Like, you know, as I said in the beginning of the podcast, I finished up my PhD last last year as well. Or actually this year still. But so, you know, before finishing my PhD, I was wondering what should I do and, you know, what's the next thing for me. And, you know, I decided that I didn't want to be an employee, if you will, like work for some company or, you know, some banking system. And so I decided
PhD is in Java.
Is in Java stuff.
So you
certainly had
opportunities to go work in banking.
Yes. Yes, indeed. But as you know, as today's financial climate illustrates, not going into the banking world was the right thing to do.
Smart move.
Yes. So, and also I wanted to really get Drupal to the next level. You know, as you probably know, I'm quite passionate about Drupal, and I wanted to make Drupal more successful. And I figured if you look at all the big open source projects, they all are backed by, you know, really great companies. And so why not add another great company to the Drupal ecosystem and try to make Drupal even better? So that's what I did. And I first met Jay actually at the DrupalCon at Yahoo Sunnyvale. And so I was toying with these ideas, at a couple of ideas of things I would, you know, wanted to do. And then Jay approached me, and he has also been thinking about starting a Drupal company. He has done some Drupal consulting before. And basically we started talking, and over the course of the next 6 to 9 months, I think we kept brainstorming in the background, and he flew over to Antwerp a couple times, and we kept talking and brainstorming, and ultimately went out and, you know, made a business plan, raised money, and started the company at the end of last year.
Cool. So Acquia is based near Boston.
Yes, the headquarters are in Andover, And right now we're about, say, 25 to 30 people, I think, at the company. And I would say roughly, you know, like 20 people are based in Boston. So most of the people, most are in Boston. And then some of the engineers and the support people in the support team are remote. So, for example, we have Gabor in Hungary, Robert Douglas in Germany, Kieran. It's not actually in the engineering team, but he's based in San Francisco. We have some support people in different parts of the U.S. As well. We have a guy in Russia. So,
cool. And you are still living in Belgium?
I am living in Belgium, yes. Traveling back and forth quite a bit, though.
Quite a bit. Oh, man, yes. That red-eye flight. Hey. That's a tough one. So let's talk about the Acquia Drupal software distribution. What's included in that distribution? How is it different from Drupal Core that people download at Drupal.org?
Right. So, I mean, we're trying not to fork Drupal at all. So it's basically us assembling, assembling a number of modules and packaging them together. So we included things like CCKM views, image handling features, stuff like that. So, you know, some of the most popular modules, if you will. We also worked with top-notch teams to add a new team to the distribution and also made that team available on D.O., on the teams page. So, you know, did some stuff like that. And it also comes with three Acquia-specific modules, which are required to essentially talk to the Acquia network. So, and that's essentially what it is. And over time, we hope to add more functionality to Acquia Drupal and to do really a couple of things. If you go to our website, we have a roadmap of the modules that we are planning to add, but we're always looking for more feedback on that as well. Some of the things we're planning to add are the calendar module, a WYSIWYG editor, the workflow module, custom pager module, some wiki functionality, organic groups we're thinking about, stuff like that. And then also we hope to add a couple more teams to the distribution so people can quickly and easily set up a good-looking Drupal site. Going forward, we're also thinking about maybe providing people different ways to install Acquia Drupal, maybe do an Amazon AMI or, you know, maybe a one-click installer, things like that. We haven't really decided that yet, but our main objective is really to make it really easy for people to get started with Drupal.
Cool. That sounds great. So now, what if people want to install other modules, other Drupal modules? They're free to do that, yes?
Yes, sure.
And how does that integrate with the support stuff? You guys have the modules that you have as part of your distribution, and if people, for instance, write their own modules, it's going to be difficult to support those. What's sort of the plan around that whole thing?
Right, and it's something which you'll have a little bit of learning to do around, of course, but one of the things Acquia Drupal currently do, if you connect it to the Acquia network, so if you create an Acquia subscription, you actually send over a list of all the modules you have installed and the versions to us, and so when you call up a support engineer, you can actually see which modules you have installed and which modules might be unknown for us, if you will, and, you know, basically, then we will see on a case-per-case basis if we can actually help you, yes or no. The worst-case scenario, we would probably ask you to temporarily disable these custom modules to see if you can reproduce a problem or anything like that. And if you can reproduce a problem without these custom modules enabled, and if there is a bug, then, you know, we will actually fix that bug for you. If you're reporting a bug, if it's a configuration issue, or if you have a question about, like, say, how do I do A, B, or C, you know, chances are high that we can provide you support because it doesn't affect your module, right? I mean, like, if you have a taxonomy taxonomy module question, doesn't really matter if you have some sort of custom module installed. So we're also providing developer support. So if you're a developer and you have a programming question about Drupal, you know, we're happy to help you with that. And that, again, doesn't really matter if you have any other modules installed. So
that's interesting. Yeah. So so you have different sort of support levels, right? Do you want to talk about sort of the different support options that there are? Like, what's the low level that people can get in at?
Right. So we want to actually, one of the things we try to focus on is basically providing options for everybody. So we have a low-end version of our support model. And then, you know, we also have a very high-end version of our support model. And on the low end, we have the community version, which is currently available for free. So everybody can you know, basically use it for free for now. Now we have standard, professional, enterprise, and elite. And with each of these different subscription packages, there is, of course, different price points. And the differences are really in sort of the number of support contacts that you can have. That means the number of people that can actually call us up, the response time. If you have the free community version, there is, you know, no guarantees at all in terms of response time. But if you have the elite version, we guarantee that we will get back to you within 1 hour, for example. And then there is different levels in between. There's also differences, for example, in the number of tickets, support tickets that you can open. For the elite version, you basically can open an unlimited amount of support tickets. For other models, there is some limitations around that as well. And the channels that you can use also are different. Like the community version, you can only use our forums and not use, you know, email or phone. And as you go up in the subscription model or plan, you can start using email or phone. So that's where all the things different. So for different businesses with different business requirements, we have different solutions.
Cool. So let's talk about – so you've got – what did you say, almost 35 people working for Acquia at this point?
No, between around 25 people.
Oh, 25, really. Sorry.
Yes.
Misunderstood. And so you've hired a bunch of developers, and I assume that a lot of development work has been going into creating all the network stuff that's going on now. Are there plans for Acquia to do, like, work on other modules, create other modules? I mean, I guess a lot of people are sort of curious when they hear about a company like Acquia starting up. It's sort of like, especially in the open source world, it's sort of like, how's this going to start filtering down into the code? And, you know.
Right. So a lot of our engineering efforts went into the Acquia network, building the electronic services. But at the same time, you know, every day our engineers have been working in the issue queues on D2DO. Like, we submitted, you know, dozens and dozens of patches to fix bugs in the modules that we're shipping with Acquia Drupal. So we've been very active in many of the issue queues. Other ways we have contributed are we have helped organize sprints, like the search sprint, the testing sprint, the taxonomy sprint. We have have been taking a lead in organizing those. We helped organize DrupalCon Szeged, which was just 4 weeks ago or so, and also helped organize DrupalCon Boston. You know, we're helping sponsoring events like Do It With Drupal. Woohoo! Indeed. So there's a lot of ways we're trying to give back, and certainly, I mean, I think the module maintainers, they see us being active in their issue queues. So you
need to stand behind all the modules that are included in your distribution,
right?
And so the
flow really is as follows. So if a customer calls us up and they find a bug in one of these modules, what we'll do is, we'll basically look into it and try to fix it, and If we have a solution, if we have a fix, we'll submit a patch to the module maintainer in the on the Eduro, and we'll help iterate on the patch as we usually do in a Drupal community until it's being accepted by the maintainer. And once it's accepted, we basically send it over to our customer as well, or it will be part of the next build of Acquia Drupal as soon as we synced with the version on the Eduro. So that's what we do. So all of the things we do, you know, go straight to Eduro. So, I mean, to be honest, we didn't have even a bug tracker installed at Acquia to track bugs in Acquia Drupal. We've submitted these, you know, straight on the Eduro.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Is Acquia doing a lot of work with, like, unit tests and that sort of thing?
Actually, we do. I mean... like one of the things we have internally set up is we test Drupal 6 against a large number of different combinations of the LAMP stack, if you will. So we're testing Acquia Drupal and Drupal Core as well on say Apache with MySQL 4 or with PHP 4 and PHP 5, with Postgres and with MySQL, with Apache and Lightly. So we have, a large number of combinations, even different operating systems going from the Mac to Windows, to different flavors of Linux. So
Wow. We
have a pretty advanced built environment to do continuous integration testing. We've set up, Selenium-based testing. We're also computing code coverage results and are actually sharing these publicly, so you can get these on our website. It's somewhat hidden, but I think... the Drupal developer community knows where these are.
Ask Google.
ask Google. And so we're computing code coverage results of the unit test efforts in Drupal 6, but also in Drupal 7, and basically making these available. And I think for Drupal 7, it's I just looked the other day, and I think we were at 72% code coverage. So that's pretty amazing. In just a few months.
Wow. So what's been, with all this testing and really, it sounds like you've been getting really into the sort of low level of things and also looking at the contrib repository, which for you in particular, I mean, you were always focused on just core. Obviously, it's important for the health of the project that there's good contrib stuff. But what's been sort of the most enlightening part of all of this kind of low-level stuff that you've been getting into?
Right.
Or that Afi has been getting into?
Yeah, so I can't really... I mean, I haven't been personally involved with fixing any bugs in contributed modules or making them... or submitting usability improvements or anything like that. So I can't really speak to that. However, from my role as the Drupal project lead, I do see that a lot of the big modules are lacking behind. And I do think that's a problem in terms of getting Drupal adopted. And so that's one of the things
mean lagging behind in terms of upgrading to the latest version of Drupal or usability or everything?
I mean, Drupal 6 has been released in March or in February last year. So that's been, I don't know how many months, like 9 months ago.
Yeah.
And yet some, key modules are not yet available. A lot of people send me email and actually call us up at Acquia to say that for them, that's a little bit of a challenge because they're willing to migrate to Drupal 6, but they're, blocked by some modules not being available. So,
and just to be clear, Acquia, the Acquia distribution is Drupal 6.
It is Drupal 6. Yeah, we don't support Drupal 5, so that's why a lot of people are interested in using our services. But first they have to be able. They first have to get to Drupal 6, of course.
Yeah, it's a lot of dominoes to line up. Yep. I think that's probably something that I found to be enlightening was just sort of like all of the pieces that go into it and moving from, for instance, one version of Drupal to the next. It's a lot of pieces to coordinate. It's really no small task to upgrade a large site. And
It is. But in terms of adoption, you know, although there is a lot of big modules lacking behind, I just looked at the numbers the other day, and right now there is about 500 Drupal 6 sites being, you know, going live every day. So, you know, we're getting there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just 500 every day?
Yep, 500 every day. And these are active sites, meaning, you know, they stay around. It's not just, you know, an evaluation copy, if you will.
Huh.
It's actually 500 sites being deployed every day.
That's a lot of Drupal.
It is.
That's great. Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about Malum now.
Sure.
We could segue by saying, geez, with all of those Drupal sites, that's going to be a lot of comment spam.
Indeed. And especially as websites get, you know, more and more user-generated content, which is, you know, something Drupal really excels at, spam tends to be a bigger and bigger problem.
Yeah. So let's start by answering the question, what is Malum?
So Malum is a web service with an open API that sites and Drupal sites in particular can use to basically block comment spam or forum spam or registration form spam and anything like that. To do so, we offer two modes of operation, if you will. One mode is text analysis, where we analyze incoming comments and try to identify spam. And the other mode of operation is a CAPTCHA service, which is, you know, useful for, say, your user registration form or your password recovery form. You know, all the forms where you don't have a lot of content which can be scanned, but, you know, which spammers do tend to exploit. So that's basically what Malum is. What makes Malum sort of unique compared to other similar solutions out there is that we, for the text analysis part, we have sort of a unique strategy where we combine text analysis with CAPTCHAs. So other services, they will just typically reply, this is spam or this is ham, which means not spam. So it's very binary.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe that, you know, for doing spam classification, making a very binary decision isn't the right thing to do. And so we basically recognize that there is sort of a gray area, if you will, where a classifier might not be entirely confident in its decision. And in that case, where we differ is that we will actually present the user or the visitor with a CAPTCHA. And then the user has to fill in the CAPTCHA and, you know, either he succeeds at that or not, and if he succeeds, we treat the comment or whatever it is as ham. If he fails, we treat it as spam. And so it's that combination which we think makes Malum more effective. And in practice, we see that, you know, less than 5% of all the legitimate users have to fill in a CAPTCHA. So it's, you know, it's not very intrusive. It's, you know, most of the time you don't need to fill out a CAPTCHA. And, you know, in the case you do have to fill out the CAPTCHA, we provide both an image and an audio CAPTCHA to optimize accessibility.
Right. And for people who aren't familiar, a CAPTCHA stands for, what is it?
It's
a computer automated testing to prove you're a human, basically.
Yes.
I could look it up on Wikipedia here. Let's see.
Let me take. It's a computer automated. Is right, I think.
Computer automated challenge response. Oh, come on! They have it in big words right here. CAPTCHA reverse Turing test. Anyways, it's a test to make sure that you're a human.
Yes, it's a human. Are you a human test?
Yes. And you know, people have seen this test. There's various in Drupal, there's a CAPTCHA module that offers some really basic things like what is 6 + 4? You know, assuming that a computer can't actually read the words. But more common is like the twisty letters and numbers that you have to type in, and that's what Malum does, right?
Yep, that's what we do. We basically show you some letters which are slightly distorted. Is that a word in English?
Distorted, yeah.
Yes. I'm making up new words as I go.
That's how most English words are made up anyway.
So, yeah. And, you know, the cool thing about having a CAPTCHA service as a hosted service versus having a local, you know,
yep,
generating CAPTCHAs locally is that we actually keep track of the success rate of CAPTCHAs. And also if we see that somebody is attacking our service from certain IP addresses and things like that, we can act accordingly and make the CAPTCHAs more more robust, if you will.
Hmm. So Malum works with other applications other than Drupal, correct?
Yep. So it's basically an open API, so everybody can integrate it in its CMS. So there's libraries available for Python, PHP, .NET, Java, and people also have used these libraries to integrate Malum with, you know, Joomla and WordPress and Radiant and some other CMSs. So people have been using it.
Hooray!
Yes.
So just also just to be clear, so Malum is not actually part of the company. Malum is not actually part of the company Acquia. These are separate companies.
These are separate. Yeah. So I started actually Malum before starting Acquia, although it wasn't public then. But I essentially started it as, you know, I had spam on my website, and so I figured I would come up with a solution for that. And basically started building Malum, and then soon thereafter, Benjamin Schrauen, which is my co-founder at Malum, joined. He's also a long-term friend, and we studied in college together and stuff. And he's a machine learning expert. He did a PhD in those things, and so he had some suggestions for improvements, and he got involved, and you know, we kept sort of working on Malum for a while. And so because Malum predates Acquia, and because Benjamin was involved, we decided to keep Malum separate from Acquia.
So Malum is just you and Ben.
And yes, that's correct. Just me and Ben.
Cool. And so what are other things that Malum does or doesn't do? You said that it does sort of an analysis of the text stuff. Does it do like troll blocking kinds of stuff? Again, to define our terms here, trolls sure. Are actual people who are basically just coming to your site to be a pain in your, shall we say, neck?
That's a polite version, I guess. But yeah. yes, I mean, like, our vision for Malum is to basically help site owners deal with the content on their website, and we're starting, you know, we focus on blocking spam, but our roadmap is to actually help block profanity as a next thing to do. And we also have been talking about brand protection, where, say, you know, if you are Coca-Cola, you might not want people to, you know, be a pain in the neck about Coca-Cola on the Coca-Cola sites, or, you know, maybe talk about competing products and things like that. So, but that you know, that's one of the ideas we've been toying with.
So this this machine learning that you're talking about that Ben is so smart about, some of us might call artificial intelligence.
Right.
So basically, you've got sort of an artificial intelligent agent who's going through and sort of reading people's comments and saying,
Yes.
I don't know about that.
It does a sniff test. And if it smells, it will let you know.
Right.
Yeah, and it's machine learning. So one of the features of Malum is that people if we make a classification mistake, the site owner can provide feedback to Malum and can mark a certain comment as either spam, or you can mark it as profanity already, and a number of other things. And Malum will automatically learn from that. So right now, you know, we're still training to learn what profanity really is based on what people tell Malum what profanity is. Yeah. But as soon as we have enough data and we did enough testing, we should be able to roll that out as well.
Interesting. So it's also sort of learning from the people who are running the sites that are using Malum.
Yep.
And I mean, there's another thing that I know that like Akismet does, which is sort of Akismet, one of Akismet's basic things is, is that, you know, lots of times how automated spam will work is you have like a robot machine, a bot that will just sort of go throughout the web and find, WordPress sites, for example, and paste the same stuff into every comment field.
Right.
And so what Akismet does, and you can answer whether Malum does the same thing, is, you know, it just looks for the same thing that one person has said, hey, this is spam. And then it finds that exact same text pasted on other websites that are also using, that service. And it says that must be spam too. Malum does that too, right?
Yes. I mean, like, I say text analysis or text classification, but it's really, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the back end. We do traditional text classification based on statistical analysis, but we also build reputation models about, you know, users and IP addresses and things like that. So we can see if people are malbehaving across multiple sites or when they're, you know, behaving really well across multiple sites. And so there's different levels of things, you know, where we build knowledge into the system, which were all combined into a single thing, which will give the ultimate answer to whether something is spam, yes or no.
Huh. And so it's also sort of coming up with kind of a rating of a person based on IP address and stuff like that.
Yeah. So we have internal ratings, which we are not currently exposing about persons. Like, for example, we support OpenID. And so for every OpenID, we have a rating, if you will.
Oh,
and
wow.
that rating can go up or can go down or, you know. we actually have been thinking about exposing the ratings because as the web evolves, I think reputation management is going to be increasingly more important. And having something like a reputation across multiple sites could be really useful because, you know,
wow. you could eventually go in and see your user listings and also see their Malum ratings.
Yeah.
Which would be sort of like, yeah, this person hasn't posted a lot on your site, but on all the other sites they post to, they're a pain in the neck.
Yes. Yes. Indeed. And so when somebody new comes to your site, you would be able to ask us what his reputation is. Which could be incredibly useful, right? So say you are, let's talk about eBay, for example. A lot of people know eBay and they know where, you know, every seller has a rating, right? And so why, if you go sell stuff on another site, why wouldn't that rating transfer to the other site as well? Because if you've been a good guy at eBay, chances are high you would be a good guy, you know, at another e-commerce website.
Yeah, yeah, right. So this is right. This is a thing people have been talking about, sort of particularly related to ID on the web and OpenID in particular, is sort of bringing your profile with you, but also kind of like, you know, your reputation with you. And
it's actually critical to combine these two to make something useful, I think.
Huh.
Because an OpenID is just just a name.
Right.
But what you really want to do is create an actual identity, and to have an identity, just like in the real world, there is a lot of things associated with that identity, and adding these attributes such as a rating to your identity, you know, provides for a much more rich, you know, identity, which can be useful in many different ways.
Huh. Very cool. Yeah, yeah. So what does Malum cost for people to use, and how would they install it, should they want to do that?
Well, I'll explain that to you. But one more thing I wanted to mention is a feature which we almost have ready. I mean, we've been testing it for a long time now. It's language detection. So if you give us a comment or whatever, we can tell you, I think we support 70 languages right now. We can tell you this was Thai, or this was, you know, some flavor of Arabic, or this was Dutch or French or English, which could also be very useful, you know, to block spam or just to help deal with, you know, in multi-language environments, it's useful to direct people to the right site when they want to post something. And for example, on my site, you know, a lot of my friends and family, you know, our native language is Dutch. And so sometimes I write something in English and they'll post something in Dutch because they know I speak Dutch as well. And I don't really mind, but it's difficult for all the other people that, that stop by my site because they don't speak Dutch. And so one of the things I could do is basically to, you know, either suggest them to write in English instead or even decide to block comments in Dutch, if you will.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've definitely seen that where, you know, some sites, you know, you'll be reading the website and all of a sudden there'll just be a comment in German.
Yes, and if it's a comment in Russian, it's, you know, it might be, it's could be likely to be spam.
Yeah, yeah. And I, so, you know, I've even seen those too, where, you know, on one of my sites where I then go run it through Google Translate and it turns out that it, you know, it's an ad for something in Chinese or something.
Yes.
Know. Huh.
And so right now, to come back to your previous question, we have two versions of Malum. We have Malum Free, which we believe is sort of good enough for 95% of all the sites out there. It's really for personal blogs and small community sites. And it's essentially, you know, it does all of the things I talked about. And it's the only drawback is there is some volume limitations. You can only use it on sites that have less than 100 valid comments a day.
Mm-hmm.
So in not counting spam comments. So if you have less than 100, you know, there's no reason not to use Malum Free. And the other limitation is that for Malum Free, we provide no guarantees with regard to service level. It's more of a best effort basis. So if the service goes down, it goes down. I mean, it's free after all, right? And then we have Malum Plus, which we are charging 30 euros a month for. And that's more for business websites or corporate blogs or bigger community sites or, you know, basically any site that maybe has advertising revenue or which is business critical.
Mm-hmm.
The advantages over Malum Free is that you get, you know, practically unlimited use. So you can have as many comments and stuff as you want. And we actually do provide service level guarantees. So as soon as you pay, you know, we set you up with a high availability setup where we actually give you multiple servers in multiple data centers around the world to provide sort of extreme robustness and, you know, to guarantee that the service will always be available.
Cool. So what happens when the server goes down for the free people? Does the spam just get through, or can people not post, or does Malum come through later and kind of clean up, or what's that work?
So that really depends a little on the module or the plugin. In case of the Drupal plugin or module, I should say, there is actually a configuration option. So you can either choose to accept spam when Malum is down, or basically accept everything, including spam, or you can choose to block everything when Malum is down.
Not that we want to give the impression that Malum is down. That happens with everything.
Yes, it could happen. But, you know, everything is monitored and we have people on call 24/7 in case things go down. But it's sort of hard to give, you know, for a free service to give people access to, you know, 3-4 servers in different data centers around the world. You know, it gets expensive to give away.
Yeah, exactly. We've been using Malum on lullabot.com for quite a while, and it's pretty darn good.
Well, I mean, there you go.
We get very, very little spam overall. I mean, there's, of course, all sorts of new ways that the spammers are coming up with to figure out how to get around things. I mean, the latest one is they're just hiring people to actually go to websites and type things in.
I've saw sites where I think you can, they guarantee that they'll manually post your comments on, like, I don't know how many sites, but, you know, for like, I don't know, $0.50 per site or something. Wow. Yep. Hmm. And, you know, that's the advantage of using something like Malum. I mean, we see it as our core business to help, you know, keep an eye on all of these trends and to continuously refine the service to block spam.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really interesting and really promising. So
that's great. We might get somewhere.
You kids and your websites. I don't know. It's interesting. And Malum, I guess just to visit, the actual Malum, stuff, like the code that you're running in the back end of that is Malum. Is that PHP and Drupal based or?
No, the backend is Java based, so I guess that's where my Java background.
Finally, using your PhD for something. all that work.
Yes, that's Java based, and it's not open source either. We might make it open source at one point, but for now there is just too many moving parts to manage.
Make it work first. Make it fully. Yeah. Sure. Cool. Well, we've got a little bit more time. Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of where things are, like the current state of Drupal 7 a little bit?
Always.
Always. so we could start with, is Drupal 7 out yet? The code freeze was what, in February or something?
I actually forget when the original code freeze was scheduled to be. But I always said that the code freeze date would depend on, you know, how good we are as a community at doing unit testing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting pretty damn good at it, thanks to all the work of a lot of people. So, the reason I didn't set a new code freeze date is basically because I want to wait a little bit more until there's a little bit more breathing room in the community in terms of, you know, adoption. Like, a lot of people are still trying to get onto Drupal 6.
Yeah.
And, you know, before the bulk of the people are in Drupal 6, I don't think it's, you know, it's worth, you know,
having them jump two rungs at once. Yeah.
Indeed.
So I sort of feel like, and you can tell me if you feel the same way, but I feel like Drupal 5 was sort of the tipping point for Drupal and the Drupal community. And the majority of Drupal sites that are out there, particularly big, you know, quote unquote important sites, are running Drupal 5 and sort of came in and came out on Drupal 5. Do you feel the same way? And so that's why I'm feeling like things are sort of slow moving a little bit, is just has a lot to do with inertia and momentum, and just that there's so many big lumbering sites, if you will, that are on Drupal 5.
There's a lot of big sites on Drupal 5 for sure, and I guess every major Drupal release has been sort of a tipping point, and I'm sure that, you know, in a couple, you know, in 6 months or so, or a year from now, if you look back on Drupal 6, we'll look at it as a tipping point as well. I actually see a lot of momentum for Drupal 6 as well. Talking to some really big sites, you know, they're all eager to move to Drupal 6. Some actually have backported some features from Drupal 6. And the people I talk to, they all have a roadmap where they'll be migrating to Drupal 6 the next, you know, two to three months for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's really exciting to see each version come out and the new features and start working with it and stuff. And man, I mean, I've just been the Drupal 6 stuff, and in particular the new theming system, at least the way I've seen it, has been just really great. I mean, it's really fun to work with and does some really amazing and very cool things.
Indeed. The amount of books coming out on Drupal 6 is also pretty pretty amazing.
Yeah. And so what's on the horizon for Drupal 7? I mean, I guess as people are getting to Drupal 6, they can start to put their mind on the horizon. what are the sort of new features that have gotten into the already or are looking like they're going to get in? I guess there's a whole new database abstraction
yes.
layer.
Whole new database abstraction layer.
we had Earl on the podcast last week, and he was talking about it. he wasn't complaining about it, but he was just saying it's going to be a lot of work for him to kind of get things integrated with the new database layer. But
it is a big change, but it's for the better. I mean, like, we'll finally have decent support for master-slave replications. We can start doing things like transactions, which are, you know, not unimportant in, you know, like an e-commerce environment, if you will. We have a lot of opportunities now to take advantage of, you know, I guess MySQL-specific features or Postgres-specific features like multi-insert queries. Not sure if you know these, but essentially in one command, you can insert multiple rows in a table. Delayed inserts from MySQL is also great to help, you know, manage performance things in Drupal and stuff. So all of these things, like, you know, like a dozen or so really cool features suddenly become available, in Drupal 7.
And so Drupal 7 will require PHP 5.
It will require PHP 5.
Which also sort of opens up being able to develop on things like the new PHP yep. data abstraction layer.
Yep. So it's actually built on PHP's PDO stuff, which is its new, you know, SQL abstraction layer, if you will, which means that, you know, Drupal 7 will be extremely future-proof because ultimately that will be the only way to do things in PHP.
Does that mean you could do like just crazy things like, oh, if I want to see how the site runs on Postgres, you just put it in Postgres and see how it runs?
Well,
theoretically.
I mean, with Drupal's database abstraction layer on top of that, you'll get a lot closer to that. But, right. you know, not with just the PHP's PDO stuff.
Right. What else? Has been
what
happening.
Else?
I know that there's been a lot of focus on usability. I've mentioned that before as well. How are things?
Usability continues to be a big thing for us to focus on. And, you know, I would also like to ask more people to get involved with usability because we can't have enough usability improvements. But some of the things we did already, we added some more drag and drop goodness to Drupal 7. So, you know, the languages page, I think, is drag and droppable right now. Poll options and filter formats, I believe, are all draggable. One of the other cool things in terms of usability, I think, is we started adding an install profile to Drupal Core, which will essentially make it easier for people to get started by setting up some dummy content. So I think, you know, we do things like we created a standard taxonomy, a vocabulary with some terms in it. We create some additional node types and stuff like that to have something out of the box instead of, you know, a completely empty configuration. And that will be available in combination with the original sort of empty install profile, if you will.
Cool. Are there features that you'd like to see in Drupal 7 that haven't quite come to fruition yet?
Yes. More than I can talk about, but at the top of my head, more of CCK in core, and there's been work on getting fields in core. That's something I would like to see happen. Multiple output formats so that we can generate XML and JSON and other stuff in addition to just, you know, XHTML. So one of the things I would really like to see happen is for every node in the system, we would automatically output that as Atom, if you will,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I think opens up a lot of opportunities in terms of syndication between sites. I would like to sprinkle Drupal Core with some more RDF stuff so that we generate semantically rich pages. And, you know, I've been talking with David Peterson was writing for SitePoint and was also in SegGet about maybe we can ship Drupal core with some predefined vocabularies, such as a FOV vocabulary or a Creative Commons vocabulary. And then people can optionally enable those vocabularies and make it very easy to, you know, to tag their posts with this vocabulary. And when they do so, we automatically generate a rich rich HTML, semantic HTML. So for example, if you tag a post with a certain Creative Commons license, there will be, you know, the typical RDF Creative Commons blurb will automatically appear in the HTML of your page, which then in turn, you know, and this is really cool, sort of semantic search engines can use to provide you with faceted search. And so they can do things like you can search for all, you can search for a keyword, say Drupal, and then you can filter the results, say by all, but you know, by certain or specific Creative Commons license.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of cool stuff we can do by having some predefined vocabularies, you know.
And does that sort of tie in with like microformats? And I mean, it's sort of the same concept, right?
It's sort of
semantic stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
We've got Chris Messina, actually, a big microformats guy, is coming to speak at Do It With Drupal.
Cool.
And he's going to talk about DSO and the stuff he's doing around the sort of distributed social networking stuff. Very cool.
Chris is great. Everybody should listen to him.
Listen to Chris, smart man.
Yes. He's great.
Yeah. Any other bits and pieces for Drupal 7?
Well, testing, but we talked about that.
Yeah.
We're doing a good job there. Oh, recently, actually, this week, Webchick committed the hook file patch, which sort of makes files first class Drupal objects.
Oh.
And so we have file objects, and file objects have their own load and save functions, for example, which will, you know, it's sort of an enabler patch for a lot of modules in the contributed module repository. So
right.
That's going to be cool. Then there's a lot of small things. We added OPML import functionality. The code registry was a big patch as well, but it's sort of potentially less visible.
Right.
But so there's been a lot of good progress in the backend, and I would like to see us shift a little bit more towards user-facing usability improvements now.
So is there a current sort of timeline for Drupal 7? Is there like an updated date for
not yet.
Code freeze?
Not yet.
Still?
No. Nope. You'll need to have a little bit more patience.
Okay.
I'm gonna sit back a little longer, as I said, and see how things evolve before setting a new date.
Yeah. Well, I still find I'm, you know, upgrading my sites to Drupal 6 and focusing on Drupal 6 and stuff like that. So I'm okay with that. But
I'll continue to listen to the community, and when they think we're ready, and I think we're ready, then, you know, I'll communicate a new date.
Sure. Cool. Well, any last words, anything you want to say to sort of wrap up the podcast?
I'll be back.
I'm still here.
Maybe next podcast in 15 months.
I'll try to have you on before then. So, but yeah, and you're not actually going to make it to New Orleans, but most of the rest of the Acquia team will be there.
I wish I could be there, but I had already committed to speak at another conference on the exact same date. So, you know.
I understand. A man of many commitments. we'll miss you, but yeah, we'll have Gabor is going to be there, Robert Douglas is going to be there, and Barry Jaspin. That should be good. We'll
should be a lot of fun.
We'll
maybe
video conference you or something.
Yes, I was going to suggest that video conference meet for a couple hours. You know, I'm bummed I can't be there because, you know, not only are we going to talk about Drupal, but, you know, there's a lot of friends out there as well, right? So it's always fun to hang out with the Drupal folks.
Yeah. Well, we'll drink some Belgian beer in your honor.
Please do.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yes.
And really, congratulations on all of these things. It seems like we've had you on a few other podcasts, and it was mostly, oh, I'm still continuing on with my PhD, you know, I'm going to do this. And, you know, meanwhile, watching the rest of the Drupal world doing various things. And it's really great to see you out there doing lots of things with multiple companies doing multiple things and still having more time to work on Drupal. So,
yeah.
Rock.
Alrighty.
All right.
Talk to you next time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Keep up the good work.